Welcome back to the Otaku DX show with Fief and Deef. We're going to talk about the Japanese cartoons we've been watching. Oh, actually, I want to start off. I'm not going to cover this too much in depth because I want to do it on a Fief show with one of our other writers for Collection DX. So today I watched the final two episodes of Erica Seven AO. Astral Ocean. And then I watched Girls in Panzer because I wanted to watch a show that made more sense. Well, I'm not going to say that the two final episodes, which were aired together months later, the last episode came out, I think, in like mid-October, the previous episode. And I don't really know why they decided to push them back to, you know, November. The show also had a problem where it was preempted by the Olympics and didn't air for 2 weeks as well.
Oh, jeez.
Which I keep feeling like nobody really wanted to run this show, and very few people working on it wanted to make it.
Mm.
Other than the fact that, yeah, it looks really nice because it's a bone show.
Yeah.
The thing is that the director is the guy, the same guy who did the Erica 7 movie.
Mm.
He did the TV show, but actually with the TV show he had help from writer Dai Sato, who's did the series composition and wrote most of it. And you can kind of tell that, boy, this director really doesn't like Dai Sato and just felt that the story needs to be like how he wanted to do it, with more time travel and causality and
stupid stuff.
Yeah, I don't know if it's like an interesting failure, but it just seems like very unnecessary. Mm. In that way, sequels usually are like a bad sequel.
Yeah,
usually
yeah.
Is. Yeah. I don't know who this show is for, because it just kind of pissed off all the fans of the first show. It's got a lot of like plot threads and red herrings, and doesn't really have a lot of payoff. And
it's one of those shows that it dies in the worst way, in that it's just people don't seem to care and don't talk about it at all. Like,
I think, it seems like the discussion has died out.
Like, until you mentioned it this morning, I forgot the show existed. Because I don't hear anything about it. It's not a case where it's so bad people argue vehemently or get mad about it. It's just,
yeah,
they don't care.
And also, I don't think any toys are going to come out for this show.
Probably not. Probably not. I'll be surprised if they do.
I mean, Bandai did tease a Robot Damashi, the new Nervash, which actually upgrades itself in the course of the final episodes.
Mm.
So there's a new variant that will never have a toy.
Yeah.
Unless it's like a web exclusive or whatever.
The Nervash needs to kill another toy line already. Just like it did with SD Infinity.
Oh. You know what was funny? I was looking through old photographs I had, or old like pictures on my computer. Mm-hmm. I found an advertisement for the next SD Infinity. It was going to be Gurren Lagann.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, I don't even remember that.
Yeah.
That sure died.
That sure died, yeah. I feel bad for Bandai because I mean, their treatment of the first show as far as merchandise goes was kind of weird. They did non-transforming model kits of all of the robots.
Mm-hmm.
And they did the trans models, which were parts formers of all the main robots. And they weren't really that great, but they weren't terrible either.
Mm.
But for a show with transforming robots, they never did like a deluxe toy.
They never did, did they?
Yeah, they never did like a Chogokin Nervash.
Mm.
I mean, they did Aquarion. That toy had a lot of problems, but you know, they did it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Aquarion of all Super Robot Chogokin did come out, so
yeah,
there's one newcomer robot that at least has a toy. The poor new Nirvash isn't going to have anything. And if it does, it's going to be limited release or something. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. My note here just says E7 AO, fuck it. Okay. On to something else. The Elgimes. The Ludgeim.
Oh, Ludgeim.
Ludgeim. Because I had thought that the show was going to get a little more serious, and it kind of is now, but at the time when I was posting about it, there was some mood whiplash.
Yeah.
Because they managed to escape from Full Flat's asteroid base. Yeah, I like Full Flat as a character so far. She seems to have a interesting past to her. And because she's one of the few independent entities in the whole universe, she is not under control of Poseidon's will. You know, the team, Daba and Cal and Lessie, are just palling around on her asteroid base. And at one point, Daba goes to her to a Full Flat's quarters, and she's taking a shower. Because, you know, we have to have shower scenes in this anime.
Of course.
And she just kind of, you know, treats him like a kid, but, you know, he's very strong, and he's going to fight Poseidon and free the planets of Pentagona from her oppressive rule. And, you know, she's kind of interested in him, that he's trying to do this. And Gavle's spaceship has been tracking down. He's been named a headhunter by the Poseidon military. And, you know, he's in command of a ship where all the bridge crew is women. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's doing some goofy faces as well. I did like the one part where he's in the shower and posing in front of the mirror.
That was weird.
Yeah, and his towel flies away, and it just kind of scribbles in front of his junk.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could just see some guy, you know, just being like, I'm not going to draw his junk. I'm sorry, I can't draw his junk. I'm just going to scribble it out there, but yeah. His first officer, her name is Irene. She has ridiculous hair. She sends off some of her crew to infiltrate the asteroid base as circus performers. Basically, women dressed in, you know, sort of like the princess from Aladdin. Uh-huh. You know, just like doing some juggling, doing some knife throwing. And then they try to assassinate Daba. And during this fight, the assassins, they start to run away. One of them actually takes a cyanide pill while she's still in Cal's arms. I was like, oh, her mouth is foaming. Oh, that's what that means. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Daba ripped off the top from one of the girls, and she's running around topless. And they all run off to get in, and Daba, Cal, go after Lesse, who was feeling upset that she left Amu behind. So she wanted to go off and get her.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So they go off, and so they all manage to get back into the ship, and they're getting chased down by Gavle again. I did like how, for whatever reason, the assassin who was topless at the time, she got burnt by the engine exhaust, but she was okay.
Uh-huh.
She was a little messed up. She's like, she had the soot on her face.
Right, because that's all... Yeah.
It's a cartoon. Yeah, exactly. She did manage to infiltrate the Daba ship, and eventually they capture her, and they put her off in a little space pod with a note on it. So
a note?
Yeah, a note. A note on it, so that
like
when...
they just stuck a like post-it note on it or something?
Yeah, they stuck a little piece of paper on it with a note. Yeah. But yeah, so Gavle did manage to pick her up again. And then we get into this thing where Hashimoto is one of the guys on the ship. He was one of the bandits from the beginning of the show who was trying to capture the Elgimes and sell it for parts. And So he's part of, because Amu shows up, she gathered some of her old friends, and they have a ship, and they're transferring Daba, Lese, and all the characters onto the new ship. And this is obviously the part where, Amu is really pissed off at Lese for leaving her behind. But Daba is like, he managed to get her to calm down by kissing the video screen that Amu is currently on. And she just melts because it's so cute that, you know, these girls are like really, really pissed off all the time, but they're really just putty in Daba's hands when he wants them to be. So these guys are all together now. Hancha Mancha, ridiculous name.
His names are so dumb.
He's just a thug. And he decides that he wants to betray the crew and sell Daba, Kiao, and Amu and Lese off to Gavle. Collect the bounty on them. I did like when he's looking up the computer report about them. He flashes through a bunch of things on the screen, and one of them is Janu from Southern Cross, the TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like a news reporter. They also had a white-colored Sharivan, the metal hero, on the screen. And a couple of things were like, oh, naked woman, and I think it was like a motocross program and something else. But yeah, and then he gets to the screen at the end. And so he tries to betray them and sell them off to Gavle. But eventually he comes back with Daba, and they forgive him for this. Which I really hate it when they do this in shows where it's like, this guy's just going to betray you again.
Mm-hmm.
You should just leave him out in space.
Just like, learn your damn lesson already.
Yeah. I mean, they eventually do that. They get rid of him, and because he's chasing them down, because the Hasha Bunch is chasing them down in some robot as they're trying to flee, and he gets knocked out of his robot, and he actually ends up as... basically, he flies through space, and then he ends up right smacking into the head of Gavle's new robot, the Ashura Temple.
Ooh.
Yeah, he just kind of like, you know, sort of like...
what a damn coincidence.
What a damn coincidence in the vastness of space. So, yeah, it's kind of a goofy scene overall. One thing that kind of bothers me about when the Ashura Temple showed up is that it replaced the Vachu from the last episode pretty quickly.
Mm.
And it's like, cool design. Now it's been totally replaced. But anyway, also the fact that when they draw the Ashura Temple, they don't really draw its face properly. So it's supposed to have like a little mask with eyes, kind of like the Mirage Knights or the Lead Mirage from Five Star Stories. Mm-hmm. But they don't draw the eyes, so it's just kind of this Cobra Commander face with a big headdress. So, yeah. So eventually what happens is our heroes make their way back down to the planet, a planet, and they are being chased down now by the daughter of the bandit leader from the beginning of the series, who was a crazy lady, but you know what? I guess she was a really great mom. I'm forgetting about something, but there's an extra thing going on here where Daba met his half-sister. Her name is Kwasan Olebi. And she doesn't remember Daba for some reason, and turns out she's being controlled by Poseido. And he really tries to snap her out of it by singing the hymn of his planet. Him, Kiao, and a bunch of other guys from Daba's home planet sing this hymn. I thought it was kind of a funny little Macross 7 moment where they're... Right. So I thought it was a funny little Macross 7 moment where they try to use the power of song to break mind control.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't quite work, but she starts to remember Daba a little bit.
Progress.
But yeah, there's some progress there. So anyway, we get down to the planet, and Asphy, she has an old machine, a little flying contraption, with a bunch of drones attached to it with wires. So sort of shades of Gundam there, you know, where a robot or where like a big mobile armor has bits and it tries to shoot things down with remote weapons. Asfi is working for Gavlay, and apparently Hashabonsha told Asfi that Daba killed her mother, when really it was Hashabonsha who accidentally killed her mom. Oops. Yeah, so Daba, being the kind-hearted but earnest young man that he is, can't kill her because she's just a kid. And even though she comes into their ship as a prisoner, she willingly comes to his ship to talk with him. And at one point they're like, well, we need to constrain her and lock her up because he can try to kill you, Daba. So Daba goes to take a shower. And I like how he gets undressed in front of Amu, and she gives this silly face when she's getting all hot and bothered by his perfect tanned pecs. Because he's a dark-skinned guy, you know. Dark-skinned Luke Skywalker. I don't know what's up with Tomino and shower scenes, like, with dudes as well as women. But, you know, I appreciate it because it's a little something for the ladies. And Daba gets attacked in the shower, psycho style, where Asfi actually had a garroting wire hidden inside the heel of her boot. So she tries to kill him in the shower. To which he says to her, while he's being choked to death, if you kill me, you can't go back to being a regular kid. You know, killing people changes you. And she thinks about this. And Daba's friends manage to get in there just in the nick of time, but she does run out. And she's thinking that, you know what? Maybe he's right. Maybe there's something else is going on here. And Daba, who is nothing but a towel right now, he's like, I'm going to go off and fight the Elgheim. And, you know, he runs off to get his clothes. And his towel falls away. So again, Amu does this thing where she's like, oh my god, I saw his dick. Now I can't get married. Oh, I'm just kidding. So, yeah. And they go off and have a little robot fight. Now, the thing with this fight, it's like, okay, robot fight. Asfi, she decides not to kill Daba. And she gets in the way of these two guys fighting. Now, she doesn't die. She manages to eject in time as her little spaceship thing is exploding. Her parachute burns up, though. So the way Daba saves her from falling to her death is he throws the shield of the Elgheim, which apparently can glide through the air by itself, to catch her.
And this doesn't kill her?
Well, it's fiction. You know, if you catch somebody at the right time when they're falling, it's okay. But it's like, man, and this thing like was gliding for about a minute or so afterwards. as she's thinking that, oh my god, Daba saved me. And then it crashes. And then it kind of gently, you know, skids on the ground. And
of course.
Comes to a stop. I was like, wow, that's kind of interesting. So, yeah, that's where we are right now. I know the opening for the show is going to change in the next episode, and they tease the arrival of the Elgheim Mark II.
Yay.
So, yeah, that's Elgheim. Actually, no. One more episode. Okay, so this is kind of all about Amu. She's feeling dejected. She's been running around and being chased by the police. She hides in a trash can. Her and Lilith is also there, the little fairy. This guy named Chek shows up, and Chek is her old boyfriend. So she stays with him for a little bit. She showers off. She's got that kind of post-cloidal look to her. She's wearing one of his shirts, all that stuff. One of the funny things, though, it's also kind of weird at the same time, is Lilith comes out of the shower and she's like, I need some clothes too. So Chek takes this little doll off his shelf and throws it to Amu, and she catches it. And it's a little doll with long black hair, and she notes, "Wow, this doll looks like me." That's kind of creepy, Chick, that you haven't seen Amu in a while, so you made a doll of her.
Oh, jeez.
But whatever, Lilith puts on the clothes, and we go to the next part. Chick is like, "Please come back with me. I want to be your boyfriend again. We should get back together." And she's like, "No, we can't. I'm changed now. I love Daba." Why? Because he's pretty. I'm still trying to figure out why they like him so much. I mean, yeah, he's, you know, a nice guy. He's the standard sci-fi hero kind of guy. But he doesn't, like, flirt with them. Mm-hmm. He doesn't really, you know, go on a date with them. It's kind of weird. It's like, is it just because he's pretty? I don't know.
That's all it takes.
That's all it takes in this anime, apparently. So she's trying to get back to the ship. Unbeknownst to her, there's a tracking device on her. Chick is upset because he thought that they wouldn't do that to him, that he could talk her back from this, because his superiors went over his head and decided to have her tailed by a couple of Vatshus, and Nemo Han is back in the game too with her Ooj. So Amu figures out that she's being followed, and she manages to pull him off her trail. Chick goes out. He steals one of the ball buds to go and... No, one of the other robots. To go and stop Nemo Han and her thugs from destroying Daba's ship. At one point, Chick comes down from his robot. He confronts Amu, and she shoots him in the shoulder. Because she's like, "Get away from me." But, yeah. So that's kind of where we're at right now. Bunch of characters have been introduced, and something's going to happen soon.
Indeed.
Do you want to do something or something we've both been watching?
I can talk about Gyro Zetter again.
All right. Actually, Dai Sato, the writer and series composition guy for the first Erica 7, he's doing this show.
Is he?
Yeah.
How about that? For the longest time, we only had two episodes translated.
Yeah, the fan subs are really slow for this show.
Well, the people who were subbing it only did because the fans voted that they wanted the show translated. And the people actually translated never really liked the site, or the show.
Oh.
And so a different group actually picked it up. And so they just kind of picked up where they left off.
Yeah, it's weird though. I mean, it's a robot show, guys. I mean... Yeah, it's a kid's show, but so were all these shows we watched back then, too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, but, no, so we got to see the next two episodes of this. They've been doing the pretty episodic thing of, you know, there are five kids who are all going to have different, robots by the end of the day. They've been introducing them one by one, slowly but surely. And the funny thing they did was, the third one that they were hinting that was going to be announced was the fat kid, Kong Loaders. The thing is, it turns out the next person they were getting as a robot pilot was not him.
Oh.
Which is a bummer because he was getting all excited because it was a really bad pun where the reason they know things is going to happen is because they have this Rosetta Stone ripoff called the Rosetta Graphy.
Mm-hmm.
And they translated some of it and all they could read was Ka-re-su. And so the main character being the idiot that he is, thought it meant curry rice.
Oh.
And so I thought, okay, so the next pilot must clearly like curry rice a lot. And so it had to be the fat guy, right?
Yeah, did it turn out to be Car Race?
Car Racer, because there's Car this Racer. Super famous 14-year-old, you know, racing prodigy character who shows up later.
Oh, okay.
And he's the next
poor
pilot.
Poor fat kid. I mean, it's because you're fat.
Yeah,
you can never get ahead in life.
They do a good list of saying, like, even if you're not a pilot, you have your own important part to play in this. And he's going to get a robot later because it's in the damn credits, so I don't feel too bad for him. But, so, you know, the new character shows up who is the driver of the Nissan GT-R robot, the blue knight-looking one, which is one of my favorites, I think. He's a complete jerk because he's better than everyone else.
Naturally.
And there's something really concerning about this, I think, which is the fact that this kid's like 14, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, of course, like, middle school girls are, you know, going to swoon over him and everything and whatnot. But in addition to that, the various, like, people running the actual, like, gyros at her base, because they have, like, grown women doing that, like, people who are, like, in their, like, 20s or 30s, they are...
What about the main character's mom?
She's just making curry rice.
Oh, okay. She seems pretty popular, you know, because she has huge tits.
The most popular is actually his teacher.
Oh, okay. Is that who it is?
I think so.
Oh, okay.
I think that's the one you're thinking of. But
oh, okay.
Basically, all these fully grown women are, like, on their knees worshipping this guy. Like, they're trying to sneak into his room and give him the manuals to the gyrosetters just so they can see him again. And eventually they reach a point where him and the main character decide to have a race to see who's better.
Mm-hmm.
And every single one of the women...
And they all dress up as race
queens, they all dress
right?
up as race queens.
Yeah, okay.
And that's where a lot of that fan art came from.
Yeah.
And they start saying stuff like, you know, oh, you're such a stud and stuff like that. I'm like, he's still 14, you know this, right? It's like...
It's okay to be a pedophile if you're a woman.
Yeah, apparently.
It is okay. 100%.
It's kind of hilarious. Like, I love Gyrosetter for what, like, a stupid, typical yeah. giant robot show it is, but I also love the fact that they're clearly aware that the kids watching this are probably in their, you know, early teens and are probably going through puberty as well. Because... Like, this yeah. isn't the first time they've... Like, I almost feel bad for how much they object the teacher character to random sex appeal. But at the same time, she also does it to herself. But, like, she does it to herself, but she also doesn't deal with it if anyone else does it to her. And so I can't get mad, but I still get really confused.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Gyrosetter's still a stupid show, but man, do I enjoy it.
Yeah, maybe I'll pick that up for the winter season, because it doesn't look too good for me, mm-hmm. you know? The only thing that's coming up is second season of AKB-0048.
I still haven't watched the first season of that.
It's really good.
That's what I've heard from everyone.
Yeah, it's just like Girls in Panzer. It's like, this should not be good, but it's great.
Mm-hmm. It might be something I do over winter break as well.
Yeah, it's like, this is just a tie-in mm-hmm. with the band AKB48.
Mm-hmm.
Or I should call it the idol battalion that is AKB48.
It's a good way of putting it.
Yeah. Alright, have you been watching The Shinkies, Musou Shinki?
Yeah, I'm all caught up.
Okay, so... The whole, like, they go to the beach episode, kind of a wash for me.
I'm glad they skipped the whole beach scene as a whole, though.
Yeah. I did think it was really funny that, you know, the master character is this high school kid
mm-hmm.
at the beach. He can't do anything without his little robot girls.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, what do you think you're supposed to do with the beach? Play with my little wife? And it's like, no, shut up. I wish he was actually, like legitimately perverted or something, but he's just
so bland.
He's just a non-character, and it's like, just don't even have him in the show.
Mm-hmm. Well, at least he's not in it that much, thankfully.
Yeah. Next episode was actually fairly good,
mm-hmm.
where they go on to, the flight back from Okinawa, and they meet up with a bunch of Arnvals all dressed as stewardesses, because in the future even the little Shinkies are helpful robot girls.
They got jobs.
And I liked how all of the main cast were imagining their own jobs, like Stroff wants to be a pro wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
And Lene, she wants to make dresses and stuff
mm-hmm.
and all that. And Arn, she just wants to be a helpful Shinky and then come home from a hard day of work and, you know, Get some loving from Masta.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. So what ends up happening is that the girls are in the cargo hold because, you know, I guess they are property. they get out of their little containing, their little travel bag, and they just go looking for stuff. And they find Kurara. That's the purple one, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, that's her name. They talk for a little bit. They talk about their masters. And she shows off some pictures, and we don't actually get to see her master, but she's like, he or maybe she, pretty good, right? And they're all like, yeah, pretty good, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then they find that the three Arnvils, three stewardesses, are terrorists planting a bomb on the on the plane, and they're going to try to stop them, and our team's trying to stop them. So it does devolve into this kind of a... which Arnvil is the real one, or our Arnvil? Because they are mass-produced. And at first, all of the other Arnvils, they have different colored armor.
Yeah.
But the last one still has the white armor.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. And now there's a bunch of pretty cool fight scenes. I do like when Strahf is fighting one in the kitchen, and she pushes a button to make the suction on the sink open up, the drain, and sucks her through. It's like, oh, good thing that wasn't a garbage disposal.
Yeah, it still didn't end too well for her, methinks.
Yeah, no, they had her at the end. She was okay. The other one, how did they get the other one? I forget.
Oh, I can't remember.
Oh, no, Arnvil, she managed to knock her out.
Right, right, and then Arn posed as the other one. Or Anne, yeah. I can't remember their names.
Yeah, she poses as one of the bad ones. Mm-hmm. At which point, she does a very bad job at it, because she's too...
Polite
to be sinister. And so it devolves into a Captain Kirk versus clone thing. Mm-hmm. Where they're like, we need to ask her a question that only our Arn will know. And they ask a question, and they get an answer from both of them. And it's like, what's your favorite jelly can? Oh, I like peach. And our Arn is like, oh, I don't really care which one I like. I like them all. And our girls are like, so which one is it? I forgot the answer to this question. It's like, oh. Yeah. There was a little moment in it, though, where they showed where the... Because they had to get a micro SD card to turn off the bomb.
Mm-hmm.
And they were carrying them around in their little chest cavity. And this was like the really like mecha-y moment.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, where like the chest opens up and there's the power source and the three little gems that you see from the video games in there. Inside their chests. Mm-hmm. It made my friend really excited, too. Because he's like, oh my god, the detail! It's like, dude, calm down.
It's like, dude, it's from a video game. It's alright.
No, but yeah, so... they go to try to stop the bomb. And it still blows up. But oh no, it was a training exercise. Yeah, it was all a dream. No, I do like how it ends where you have all of these Arnvils... commando outfits, you know, all tactical gear. They're actually based on the SOL releases of the Buso Shinkies. This is a little subline. They only made two of these things.
I didn't know about these.
Yeah. I forget what it stands for. It's like something Order Lady, Ordnance Lady, or something like that. Strategic Ordnance Lady. That
sounds right.
Yeah. And they were basically a more realistically dressed Buso Shinki. They were dressed like soldiers. They had like different heads that were a bit more realistic and a couple of different parts to make them a bit more realistically proportioned. So, and they did actually have a tiny Buso Shinki style or sized MP5 machine gun. So you can track these down and get your Buso Shinki a proper outfit. But they all explain to our girls that This was a training exercise with the three terrorist Shinkies. We're supposed to be stopped by the commando ones. But they got on the wrong plane.
Yeah.
So there was a bit of a mishap. Kind of a cool episode, mostly because very little Masta in it. What'd you think about it? You thought it was kind of cool?
If an episode has Karadara in it, I'm probably going to like it.
Yeah, yeah. She's always a ray of sunshine.
Mm-hmm.
As she gets really bad luck.
Because
she got knocked out at some point, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But as a general whole, I liked it. I liked that we got a cameo of a Spoon Girl whose name I don't remember because I don't remember the names of any of these damn characters.
Yeah, that's true because there's so many of them and they all have nicknames too.
Mm-hmm.
Because the blue and white one, her shaky type is Altrene, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But her nickname is Lene.
Yeah, yeah. It's confusing.
Yeah. And, you know, now there's multiple Shakies of the same type, so that's also confusing.
Mm-hmm.
The next episode was actually pretty cool, too, because it was, again, mostly the Shakies and not no Masta.
Mm-hmm.
Where a Shinky from next door, Fubuki, she's the ninja type, one of the cooler Shinkies out there.
One of the more unique ones, I think.
Yeah, she's styled up like a classic ninja girl. She has a kitsune mask on all the time, usually. And she's very soft-spoken and quiet and very polite. And she's just helping them out with cleaning up. And then all the girls, Arn and Lena, go off to give Masta an umbrella. Which was kind of a fun little sequence.
Mm.
Leaving Ines behind to work in the dark with...
Because she's too stupid to turn the lights on? I don't understand what happened there.
Well, I think the store might have turned the lights off or something.
Maybe.
Yeah, or maybe... Wasn't it really hot that day?
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe they're keeping the lights off because of that. Mm. They're not allowed to turn on the AC without Masta.
Apparently.
Yeah. So they hung out inside the...
Refrigerator.
Yeah. So what ends up happening is that they were telling ghost stories before, or they were trying to. Arn, she told the story of the Peach Boy.
Yeah, I saw exactly where that was going. I'm just like, oh, jeez.
Yeah, because I remember that, learning about that in Japanese class.
Mm-hmm.
Very common Japanese myth. Mm-hmm. And so they're all kind of on edge about ghosts, and they eventually learn that Fubuki, or her owner, had lived next door, but she hadn't lived there for a while. And Fubuki actually was lost in the mountains. So she came back somehow. And they're like, oh my god, is she a ghost, Shinky, or something like that. And she starts, like, sharpening her scythe and menacing poor Inez unintentionally. And I do like kind of the big reveal where she sharpens this little, it's just a hairpin.
Mm-hmm.
And she's going to jab it through this
red thing.
Yeah, I didn't know what it was. It was like
maybe a bead or something, but...
Yeah, like a bead or something. And poor Ines was like, oh my god, don't kill me! And then it's like, oh, okay. No, this was my master's hairpin. I'm going to give it back to her. And then we learn the real how she got back was she was out in the mountains. The Zelnograd we saw in the last episode, the one who was owned by a JSDF officer.
Mm-hmm.
Who camps out in the mountains, she helped out Fubuki and gave her a recharge so she could go back and find her master again.
Because apparently, like, in addition to that, it's also the fact that Shinky also apparently just goes around that mountain and finds loads of dead Shinkies. Because there's a giant pile of them when she wakes up.
Yeah, that was Shinky hell. No, they're just all Shinkies who had... run out of batteries.
Yeah. Like, I guess people really shouldn't let Shinkies go into the mountains. Because they will run out of batteries.
Well, they get lost, and then they can't recharge.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, they go to the door of their neighbor, the owner of the Fubuki, and then she gives her the hairpin, And they're all happy again, and they learn. It's like, wait a second, I was talking to the landlord. No one's lived there in a long time. And then Fubuki comes in, visits the girls through a ninja door in the ceiling, mm-hmm. which I thought was kind of funny, and says, oh, you didn't know? My master is a ghost. She lives there. People come to live in her apartment, but...
They leave as soon as they see her.
Yeah, they get scared and run away. It's like, and they're all scared again. They're like, oh my god! And then, next episode preview. Mm. But yeah, it's kind of fun.
It was a good episode. It was pretty good. I liked the terrorist episode more, I think.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. JoJo's is still moving on. I think I'll save that for next week or something.
All right.
Muv Love, they had a new episode and a recap. And this recap wasn't a live-action special. It was an actual recap episode. Mm-hmm. Which wasn't too bad, because it actually talked about some things in the universe. Things that mm-hmm. I guess were more in the light novels that Total Eclipse is based on, but part of the show itself.
I feel that, like, as of recent years, they figured out how to do clip shows better. Like, by possibly having, like, the cast, like, you know, giving, like, commentary on things on it. Like, the characters, as if they're remembering it.
That isn't what happened in this episode. Yeah. It was more of
it's just kind of as a tangent, real quick.
Yeah.
Because clip shows have gotten a lot better than what they used to be.
It's
not all just TM Revolution saying bullshit while we see more Gundam scenes, is what I'm saying. We've come a long way.
Yeah. We've come a long way from the really, really dry ones from, like, Votoms and Dugrum.
Mm-hmm.
They did show off the new opening.
I still haven't listened to it.
I thought it was really funny because the show still had the old opening for the beginning. So I was like, oh, that's kind of funny. Mm. So I guess the last, like, couple episodes are going to have the new opening.
Yeah.
Hooray. They just did an overview of the story, talked about some things that happened. It was a pretty good refresher overall. They showed off the new opening, the new ending sequence, and they said that pay attention to the lyrics because there's all clues in how it's going to end in the lyrics. It's like, all right, whatever. The previous episode, though, was the Hot Springs episode, mm-hmm. which should be really terrible, but was actually kind of fun overall, I think. Mm. Probably the funnier thing is that one of the bridge operator girls, her name is Nyuram. Mm-hmm. She's the one with dark skin, and she has glasses and like a little cup on her head like Bayonetta. At one point, one of the other girls says that, oh, Yui, I wish I could marry her, which makes Nirama like, hey, I'm going to have a lesbian fantasy about that right now. It's like, all right. But, yeah, so they go off, they do the usual thing where they're going backpacking, but they found a hot springs in Alaska. I don't know if there are hot springs in Alaska. Still seems kind of funny to me that there is one. Mm-hmm. This is another morale booster thing.
Yeah.
All the girls in their swimsuits go and sit in the hot spring for a while. Yui shows up naked because in Japan you go to hot springs naked. Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, at one point, Nira, she sees one of the other girls come in and says, oh, you're supposed to actually come in, and then your bathing suit falls off, and you say, oh, my goodness! Ha, 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 ha. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, you're the resident Fujoshi in this show.
Uh-huh.
It's okay to be a pervert if you're a girl.
Yeah, it's totally fine.
As you would expect to happen. The guys do want to go and sneak a peek at the girls. Vincent and VG do this. But protecting the girls is this giant mountain of a man who looks like Rao with blonde hair. He's one of the pilots for the American team, the Infinities. And I like... when Vincent looks at him, he's like, we got to get past the big wave. It's like, okay. But then the guy just kind of grabs them and starts to put the sleeper hold on them.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
Yeah, that guy. And he's like, look at my magnificent pecs. Aren't they wonderful? As he's choking these guys. Mm-hmm. But, yeah. It was kind of funny, you know, and they had a little part where everyone was making dinner by the fire. VG, being Italian, was making pasta. Teresa, the darky, racist, whose name I couldn't remember. Yeah, the dark-skinned girl. She was making her own little thing, and Sui Yifei, Chinese Miku, made some kind of soup or curry that was super spicy, and she was going to give it to Yuya, and she's like, oh, darling, eat my curry, and he's like, I don't know about this, and he looks over, he sees a bunch of people passed out from eating the curry, and he's like, oh, God.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, so hijinks, but yeah, still kind of fun. And at the end, we learn that the whole reason for this morale booster was because the base commander, who looks like Duke Nukem, for whatever reason, he wanted to make a DVD of all this stuff and sell it.
Of course.
So yeah, hooray, perverts. But that's okay. Next episode, we're going to have more robot shit. So that's good. Yeah. So the show is kind of... it's winding down, but I think it's going to end and be decent overall. Mm-hmm. It kind of warms my heart to look at the Total Eclipse Facebook page and see people being like, I love this anime. Oh, all these girls are so hot, or these robots are so cool, and be like, oh, back when we just liked anime.
I know.
For stupid reasons.
It's like, I remember being that naive.
Yeah. But it's like, yeah, this is what shows are, this is what anime is all about, you know? It's like, hey, it's a show. It's not the brilliant thing. It's not brilliant or anything, but it's kind of fun. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you watched the Girls in Panzer.
I did.
The recent... you did?
Yeah, this is what I've been doing today.
Oh, okay. So yeah, that was a pretty good episode. They capped off this two-episode fight they were doing against the American team. Mm-hmm.
I have to say, it's like, this show, it's funny, because, like, for the most part, I really don't care about the female characters very much in this show. It really is one of those shows where it's like, the best part of this show, I think, is watching these tank fights. It's like, I don't know crap about tanks, but it is damn entertaining.
Yeah, it's, especially the American team in this episode, because they have that stereotypical, use a little bit of English... mm-hmm. all the time, and are led by a blonde girl with blue eyes. I like how the American team were dirty cheaters.
It's just that one girl.
You know, yeah, it was the one girl, and she had a blimp set up to eavesdrop on the radio communication between the Japanese tank team, or our tank team, the main girl's tank team.
Yeah,
and the way they got around this was by using their cell phones to send text messages to
each
other.
Which was pretty brilliant.
Yeah, it's like, well, you know, you don't actually have to use the old-timey radios inside the inside the tanks. Because one of the big things in this episode with the fight is they were worried about the Firefly, which is a variant of the Sherman that has a British 17-pounder gun. Basically what this was, I looked it up today. Britain was trying to replace the Sherman in World War II. They were using the American-built Sherman tanks. But their tanks were coming out in time. So they just adapted their most powerful anti-tank gun onto the Sherman to create the Firefly variant. Mm. That's why they're worried about it. It's a very... it's got really good range, and it's used for killing tanks. Yeah, that was kind of fun. I did like how the girl who was the gunner inside the Firefly was this, like, tomboyish girl with a crew cut. Always chewing bubble gum.
Yeah.
Because that's how it is with sniper. It's got to be focused on something.
The cold-hearted. Was that a reference to anything in particular, or was that just the archetype of that?
It might have been. I'd have to look into it, but it was still kind of cool. I like how the girl and their flag tank, which is the leader tank, more or less, the one you have to kill to win the match, she was going crazy.
She was hilarious as far as being an overreacting nut.
Yeah, because she was like, oh, this plan is going to work. You know, my eavesdropping is going to work totally. And then she just got just completely unhinged when the tank team found her and were chasing her down. And she was like, I'm not going to lose because the Sherman is like the most mass-produced tank of World War II. And even a monkey can pilot it.
And it's really comfortable on the inside, too.
Yeah, it's really comfortable on the inside, too. And she's just like, this is the best damn tank, and you fucking bastards are going to kill me!
Yeah.
It's like, oh, don't go too crazy there.
Doesn't help that she also had, like, so... Like, they spent a lot of animation on making her look insane. Like, the shot you picked up earlier, where suddenly it, like... The 80
like
shot.
80.
Well, not in addition to that, the frame rate on that part is ridiculous.
Yeah, it's really interesting how the character animation is just pretty well done in the show. It's very nuanced and
it's ridiculous.
Like, yeah, it's like wow.
That along with the moment where she's saying, "Oh, we finally got you now," when the American team starts counterattacking.
Yeah,
and she's just going nuts with her fingers.
Yeah.
It's like, that needs to be a GIF, because they spent a lot of effort animating her.
Yeah. So yeah, that really turned it around for me after watching the last two episodes of AO. I was like, you know what?
With good reason.
Mecha genre, whatever, I'm going to watch Girls with Tanks. So yeah. Just put all that stuff in the mecha shows, and then they'll be good again.
Yeah.
You know, unlike I found this old post on Carl's blog, aka SD Samshell. Someone had posted a recent comment on his blog post from 2008, where he was like, "Are you upset at how anime is changing?" Because around like 08 was when the facade of cool Japan was dying. And, you know, it's like, oh god, all this moe and whatever, and he was like, he made this like joke post and it was like, are you just moe for anime, you know? And actually Alan from the Reverse Thieves, he had a really good comment on there too, where he's like, I'm not really moe for anime. I think anime is like my boyfriend.
Yes.
Yeah, who should take me out to dinner.
Take me out, you know, more. Should have less moe shows.
You know, he could have less fan service. He could do a little more sci-fi. You know, he could be a little less nicer to me and female characters. Could take me out to dinner sometime. But I still love him. But, like, the hilarious thing about this is that Steve Harrison, the infamous old fogey who pretends he's smarter than he actually is, or believes he is smarter than he actually is, had these like huge diatribes about like how anime sucks now, and this whole thing where it's like, people are like, well, watch Macross Frontier, it's a pretty good show, and he's like, well, I can't get past the character designs because it used to be back in the day, character designs were an organic part of storytelling. And I'm like, really? And I wish he was still like posting on the internet. I don't know where he's gone or what's happening.
Isn't he still using dial-up or something?
No, he switched to DSL.
I don't believe you.
No, he told
anyway,
me because I was trying to get him to do a podcast, but then I became kind of disgusted with him.
Yeah,
and his attitudes. But yeah, but yeah, it's like we just want to ask him. It's like, okay, name a show where character design was organic to the story, discounting, you know, adaptations of 60s manga. Like, even back then, it's like, you know, Minmay is the way she is because the creators were big fans of Seiko Matsuda.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, they like drawing cute girls. And you know what I tried to do one time? I did this for the Gundam 00 podcast. I went into the garage to podcast.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And it kind of, it did help a little bit, but, you know, it was uncomfortable in there. And
it's a fucking garage, yeah.
It's also, it's too cold now. Mm-hmm. And also, I'm kind of sick, so.
Yeah, that'd probably not be a good idea.
Yeah, so, anyways, I feel like the biggest argument against new anime from some old fogies can be summed up like this. Or like why, or, because Steve Harrison was talking about OVAs at one point. Mm-hmm. And it was like, the OVA format was good because I like these OVAs. And it's like, no, it's like this. He believed that the OVA format was good because it made all of these great OVAs that he likes. Mm. It's like nothing really about the format itself. I mean, he did make some arguments for it, but it's the whole idea of is like, anime used to be great when they made things that I liked. Because that seems like so much of it, just common sense, that you're more forgiving of something if you like it. Mm-hmm. Because he admitted, you know, it's like, well, these old shows, they have fan service and all that stuff. But it's like, so why are they better than the new shows?
Well, because I like it.
Because I like it, yeah. And it's like, yeah, well, I like Girls and Panzer, and I'll forgive some of its flaws because I like it. Mm-hmm. You know? But anyway, that's my little rant here. I could rant about Regeneration 1 again.
Please don't. Just give up. Give up. Read something else.
No, I'm gonna finish it, but you know what? Yeah, it's a thing.
Yep.
Very few people like it. Even on TFW's message board. TFW,
people on TFW don't like anything.
Well, some people do like it there. Mm-hmm. But, yeah.
I'm just kidding. I like people at TFW.
Yeah, you like Vangelis and Gaga.
Yeah.
Dog.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so coming towards the end of this, I will...
This has been another episode of the Otaku DX Show with Veef and Deef.
I am Andrew, sometimes known as Veef. You can follow me on Twitter @VF5SS.
And I am Michael, and you can follow me also on Twitter @Draga_Kun. Again, just go read it to know how it's spelled.
Yeah. Oh, did you know I learned recently that the reason that the military says, like, Fiverr over the radio instead of just five, mm-hmm, is to differentiate it from nine.
Really?
Hmm. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Or it was like, maybe it's like niner,
yeah,
instead of five. Yeah. It's niner, yeah. Okay. Mm. Yeah, that was kind of a cool bit of trivia I picked up. So, anyway, we are going to sign off.